بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. I was given a controversial question, which is actually on two parts, so there's a bunch of questions together about one subject. I'll read all the questions and then I'll answer them. What does Islam say about gays? Should parents tell their kids not to associate with gays? Can you be Muslim and gay or lesbian at the same time? What is the ruling on it? Well, first, of course, the ruling in Islam is clear and there's no questions about it, that any form of homosexuality is haram. Right? It's a sin and it's very clear. Okay? Now, some people who practice homosexuality might argue and say, but we're born with it. Why did Allah create me this way if, you know, it's a sin? Right? This is something that they use to give an answer, I guess make themselves feel better. There's no scientific proof at all that there's, you know, any difference in the brain of a homosexual or a normal person, or, you know, a non-homosexual. There's no scientific difference at all between people, between a homosexual, a bisexual, or a heterosexual, right? And one of the things that I like to point out when I argue this is there's also a category called situational homosexual. And this is a category where sometimes people are put in a certain situation and a person who's normally heterosexual, and then in that situation, a'udhu billah, they become homosexual. One of the clear instances of this in America is prisons. Right? So, you know, outside of prison, a person would never even think about being a homosexual, but then they're put in prison for 20 years, 50 years, and a large percentage, you know, from first-hand experience I've seen, a large percentage of people commit homosexual acts. So, you know, if there definitely was born with it, it was the situation they were put in. So I'm saying all of this to say it's a choice, right? And it's a sin, so someone's choosing to commit the sin. Now, that being said, the next question is, can they be a Muslim or not? Right? Now here it depends. Okay? If the person knows what he's doing is a sin and is wrong, but performs this sin, he's still considered a Muslim. Right? Just like any other sin that people perform, and of course major sin. Right? So let's say somebody does not pray, right? And we know that not praying is a major sin, right? They know that they should pray, they know that prayer is part of Islam, but for whatever reason they're not at the stage where they pray yet. In this case they're still Muslim, but they're performing a major sin. They need to do istighfar and they need to change their lifestyle. But if the person believes that homosexuality is not a sin, right? Then at this point, you could say that maybe this person would be taken outside of the fold of Islam. We have a concept in Islam which is called the necessities of religion. And this states that if there's a certain, you know, belief or a certain law that all Muslims hold, and one person rejects it, then they're taken outside of the fold of Islam. So for instance, prayer, right? The five daily prayers that we have. Every Muslim, Sunnis, Shias, every Muslim believes that there are five daily prayers. If a Muslim comes and says, you know what? Prayer, the names of the five daily prayers aren't mentioned in the Quran, and therefore I don't believe that they're part of Islam. There is no such thing as namaz or salat in Islam. Then at this point, this person is taken outside of Islam. He leaves the fold of Islam because he rejects one of the necessities of religion. So homosexuality is like this. All Muslim sects agree that homosexuality is haram. and it's not debated, you know, it's not an issue that is debatable. So if someone says that no, you know, there's nothing wrong with homosexuality in Islam, then that at that point they could be taken out of the fold of Islam. But if they know it's wrong and they're committing the sin, then they're still Muslims. Now the last part of the question was, should I tell my children not to associate with gays? We should tell our children to associate with believers, right? So if there's a person committing any sin, right, a person who constantly commits sins, no matter, you know, what the sin is, we should try to encourage our children to not become friends with this person, not associate with this person, and we should try to encourage our children to associate with people who are believers, who, I mean, no one's masoom, but someone who doesn't constantly and openly commit sins. So, you know, I would, of course, on that level, I would definitely say that we should encourage our children to associate with believers and not people who openly sin. So hopefully this answers your question. If this sparked further questions or further debates, since we don't have too much time, as well with any of the other answers that I gave you, please feel free to come to me and have follow-up questions. Also, if you disagree with anything I said, there's other ulama that I'm sure you could refer to, which maybe they could help clarify the issue for you. Assalamu
alaikum. Assalam.
Just say that we only have 15 more minutes left. So what I'm going to do is we'll go to one more question and see how we can get it done. But on the whole, I see there are a lot of personal questions that person might actually be going through, and some of these questions are, you know, giving the impression that there is something seriously wrong in their life or their relationship that they have, whether it's between husband and wife or domestic violence or any of these type of things, like for example, even parental abuse. We see a lot of those questions, and so I would ask them, and obviously we can give a general reply, but I would truly ask them to get counsel from an alim. We have many of them here. Speak to them so you can speak to them afterwards. Also, rectify the situation. Get, you know, an alim involved in that and see if you can speak and see if you can get some inshallah answers. Right? We want you to take back some answers. So there are ulama here, and everywhere you see they are here. You can inshallah explain to them the situation so they know about it, and they can, you can keep in touch with them in the future. It's very important that we do that, because a lot of these things, you know, are serious and they need to be taken seriously for the individual that who has to go through this. Right? And so I want to keep that to the side, and just as a note, I want, you know, because of the fact that if we answer it from here, it will be a very general answer that won't serve the purpose of the problem that you are facing. And we want you to get a real answer, inshallah, and we really helped out in that situation. So please approach someone, you know, that you can just come to them, and, you know, and obviously they will keep it confidential, and inshallah, try to help you out in a long-term effort. That's the reason we invite all these ulama to come here, so that people can take advantage of that and build relationships, and hopefully, you know, be helped out in some of these things that could happen in any relationship. So with that, inshallah, I will ask Sheikh Hasnain to take the next question.
I have about four questions here, but I think I can amalgamate them to a single topic. And the topic is hijab. The first question says, what to tell high schoolers when they ask, why do you do hijab? The second question, how should a hijabi deal with weird questions asked at school from non-Muslims? For example, do you shower with that on? Can you take that off right now? The third question, if your sister or close acquaintance took off her hijab, how can you express your concern, worries and discontent to her? Because acting like nothing has happened would, I feel, almost aid her decision in removing her hijab. And the final one, does Allah accept, and are there any exceptions or excuses for not wearing hijab? And number two, what will happen in the grave if you didn't wear it during your life? I think the best way to start, first and foremost, is to say, is hijab wajib? Is it an obligation? Do we have a choice? Is it something that's recommended? Is there different grades of it and it's still acceptable? And here, we're specifically, I guess, all of these are referring to the female hijab. Looking at Surah Nur, which is chapter number 24, verse 31. Anybody who wants to take a note can take a note. Surah Nur, chapter 24, verse number 31. In which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quite clearly states what the hijab is with regards to covering up. And it all quite clearly instructs the covering of the head and of the body parts, except that which is apparent. And apparent basically means the face. Basically, when you're doing your wudu, what is exposed? When you're in salah, for example, your hands, okay, up into your wrists, nothing beyond that, and obviously up to your ankles with regards to your feet. So, the point is simply this: hijab is wajib. There's clear verse in the Quran that talks about that. We don't have any option, nor should we be looking for one. Because even as humanity has developed, we haven't, or we shouldn't have, as you can see, if we just take any example of human development, human beings have gone on to dress themselves more, not less. Yes, we've had a regression in the past 100 years or so, but before then, the aim or the progress was the more progressive you were, the more you covered up. Now, with regards to family members and teaching them and helping them, yes, it's sometimes difficult, but you have to try to make them understand why they would want to expose themselves. Remember, we were talking about how ingesting haram, it has certain effects. One of the effects of ingesting haram is this: that your levels of morality, decency, chastity are removed. So you no longer find a sense of disgrace, dishonor, immorality by reducing the clothing that you wear. Hence the reason this prevalence is where? In the un-Islamic world. This sense of sharam and haya doesn't exist. Why? Because of the constant ingestion, and especially of the khanazir, the swine. The meat, flesh of the pig has direct association with the reduction of the morality and the decency of the individual who consumes it. And the second one, alcohol. Both of these had direct relations to the reduction of the level of sharam and haya, modesty and chastity of the individual concerned. So he becomes to the point where he's not even concerned if the family members, his wife or his sister or his daughters are decent or indecent. It doesn't concern her. We should try and promote and try and talk to this individual, whether it's our sister, and say to them, look, if you truly are a Muslimah, Islam isn't you choose 99% or accept 99% of what Islam is, and then 1% you leave that. No. If Islam is taslim, taslim being submission to the will of Allah, then you accept everything. Yes? Being a Muslim means accepting what the will of Allah is. We may not understand, like I said right at the beginning, what the benefits may be, but there's honor in hijab. Society may want to remove that honor away from you, but Islam is trying to keep that intact. Understand the rationale behind that. It's a massive topic, but I'm trying to be brief because of time. With regards to school, if you get people asking you silly questions, remember the example of the sweets, right? I'm sure you've heard this. You have two sweets. One is in a wrap, a wrapper. The other one, what do you guys call sweets here?
Candy,
sorry. Look, I think the American accent is coming out now. Candy. You've got two candies, basically two pieces. One is wrapped up in a cover and the other one isn't. Both get dropped on the floor. Which one would you pick up and eat? The one that's covered up. Why? Because its integrity, purity is intact, remains intact while it's covered. The one that's exposed, nobody wants to touch. I'm sure you know what I'm getting at here. So, and it's the same thing, the analogies go on. Give up these analogies. Rocks on the road that get kicked from one side to the other, from one shoe to the next. But a diamond placed deep within the earth, covered multiple layers, that requires effort to extract it. And then when it is extracted, it's respected. It's protected. How many people do you see walking around with a diamond, you know, on their hand without security? I'm sure you guys, when you have jewelry, what do? You place it in the most protected vaults under lock and key because it's precious. Rocks, they're outside. They don't even get access inside the house. And again, I'm sure you're following the analogy. So give these types of analogies to your peers at school and even the teachers and let them reflect. The pearl in its shell, deep in the sea. And when it's painstakingly extracted, again, it's valued. So these type of analogies, inshallah, will help that. But hijab, like I said, is a dignity. It's a source of respect for a woman. And everything that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has ordained is in our benefit. Inshallah.
Right, I guess I'll just take one more question. I'm trying to answer it briefly. And that will be it for today. There are many questions we haven't reached. And obviously all of them were important. But inshallah, our job was not to just go through questions so that we can finish them all, but to go to whatever questions we can and really explain it well, so that we can take something with us and understand it with us. So obviously, there's one a question. I think, you know, it's for clarification. You know, in regards to infallibles, you know, whether they're infallible when they're born or they become infallible. No, in our belief that they're infallible when they're born. Right, that is a belief because of the fact that infallible or ismat means sinless. Ismat means sinless. If someone has done a sin, he can never become masoom. He can never become masoom because he already done a sin. Right? Or he has already done wrong. Someone who has done wrong, he can't be, you know, can't be erased and say that, okay, you know, let's all, you know, close our eyes and use that, and in black magic wand, you know, they use, you know, boom, you know, let's make everyone forget. The reality is reality. They've already said that can't be taken away. So that's the reason when we see masoom, it means sinless, and people who haven't sinned. Not people are not going to sin from now on. Right? That's the reason, you know, it's there. The last question, inshallah, you know, is a very important one. You know, we weren't able to get to it, and that is, when we say after every prayer, Allah Jal, Ya Mahdi, are we all already prepared? and how do we prepare ourselves. So that is something, inshallah, that all we can say, right, in regards to that, in very short and brief, right, is Karbala is a real lesson in front of us. We have been through the lessons of Karbala, and if we can just understand from Karbala by what lessons Imam Hussein wanted us to bring to, because one of the other question was, who should we invite as a speaker and what should be a qualified speaker? Right? And I think these two go along with each other, because people who don't understand Karbala, they just want someone to speak. Those who understand Karbala, they're looking for someone who reflects the qualities of Imam Hussein. Right? And this is the reason why we want to learn Karbala. So these lessons that are there, that know it this time, at least know this much right now, that what happened with Imam Hussein is never going to happen with Imam Zaman. It will never happen. Right? Because of the fact that what happened with Imam Hussein happened with people, with Shias, who did not have the experience of Karbala behind them. Now Imam of the time, he has students of Karbala who are here, and he will not let that happen to Imam again. And that's why there are two differences we see between Imam Hussein's movement. There's one difference we see between Imam Hussein's movement and Imam Zamana's movement. And the difference is that in Imam Hussein's movement, there are only 72. But in Imam Zamana's movement, there will be thousands and thousands and thousands. And these thousands have been produced because they are the students of Karbala. They are the children of Karbala. You all are. Inshallah, Allah, we just pray that Allah helps us and makes us a student and a product of the sacrifices of Imam Hussein, and that we are ready to give those sacrifices for the Imam of our time. After this program, inshallah, we will have refreshments outside, and thereafter, half an hour of refreshments, we'll be back into the main hall for the evening sessions, which is going to be a very powerful session. We have the keynote speech, and thereafter we have the play that has a very strong message. And inshallah, we will be back for that. We can, inshallah, just make one dua for the Imam of the time, as we remembered him. So let us make dua of Imam Zamana together. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Allahumma kun li waliyyika hujjatan lil hasan. Thank you.